Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and this is a very special edition where we are talking to Kyle Kennery, a official in the National Lacrosse League who recently came out as pansexual in an OutSports piece and has had a number of conversations discussing what it is to live an authentic life and lifestyle. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to have this conversation for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is because you want to have this conversation, particularly realizing that our audience, the Inside Lacrosse audience, is the lacrosse community. It's the community that you grew up in. And before getting to where that motivation stems from, what I was really hoping to kind of lay the foundation with is, how has the last week, 10 days unfolded since you made this public proclamation?
A great question. It's been more than I could have asked for in terms of support and just all around acceptance. 36 years in the making of wondering what people would think and having so many doubts and kind of negative thoughts. It's been a real big pleasure to have people from, people that I played minor lacrosse with through to junior, family, friends, just reinforce that they don't care who I am, how I identify. They see me as a good character. They know the work I do as a child and youth counselor. They've seen how hard I've worked to obtain my goals with within lacrosse, both playing and refereeing. They've really just reinforced that it's my character that they care about. I feel really fortunate, really blessed to have this continued support from the community. And in addition, with the article going so widely broadcast or viral, I guess, on Twitter and Facebook. I've had other people, just random folks from all across North America, reach out, down from in Anaheim up to in BC, Florida, New York State, and all over Canada. It's been fantastic. So I couldn't have asked for the fallout to have been any better than this. It's really been a dream come true.
So you grew up playing hockey and lacrosse, correct?
Correct.
And on an interview with the NLL's Devin Caney, you described or talked about how, some of the communities and yours that you grew up in, but even more broadly, some of these communities were stereotypically small and potentially not that welcoming or inclusive or open-minded toward folks who didn't kind of live a certain way. So what I'm interested in is how you feel like this opportunity to share your message, which is rife with detail and includes a lot of elements that I think make it more relatable and more understandable. Basically, you mentioned you're 36 years old. So over the course of multiple decades, how do you feel like the community has gotten from point A to point B where you feel more, I guess, like coming out will land on fertile ground?
I think in general, the world's come a long way. There are so many different religions, cultures, people of different orientations, sexualities that have really broken ground ahead of me and ahead of 2021 to lay this foundation. In my eyes, it's bigger than just a queer community movement. This is just a human rights equality vision. Looking as far back as Jackie Robinson in baseball, Willie O'Ree in hockey, looking through race and all the ground we've covered there, where there's still ground that we have to travel in making the world more inclusive, and it's come a long way. I feel the same thing has been going on with gay rights, and you know, when I say queer community, I refer to the LGBTQ community. Sometimes just a little easier to roll off the tongue. I really feel like we've made some ground over the years, and yet there's still ground to travel. So this, you know, this felt right in terms of it was the right time. I was feeling really assured in who I was. I think, you know, and I've talked a lot about this, you know, the idea of loving the man in the mirror. And really for me, that is that acceptance piece. So once I, you know, battled through addiction, you know, learned to love myself, accept me for who I am, I was no longer defined by other people's opinion. And so I felt like now was the time that I could come out, and whether people accepted or didn't accept, whether the response was love or hate, I was still going to be confident in who I am. And I was going to be me, my authentic self. And my self-worth wasn't defined by others' opinions. So I think that was the biggest thing in terms of timeline. However, you know, just to cycle back, I can't say enough for all the different groups, cultures, races, religions, everyone that has changed the world and society altogether. I'm such a minuscule piece of that. I know I'm a piece of it, and I feel honored to be a piece of it, but I'm a minuscule part of that. And really, really, this is on a broad scale, the idea of equality for all. And I've said before, you know, let's judge people on their character. Let's, you know, you a good person? Hey, ace is in my book. You know, you treat me douchey? Well, it has nothing to do with who you are in terms of maybe physical characteristics or identity. It's more just, I don't have time for that in my life. So regardless of who you are, if you're good to me, I'm good to you. And we keep moving forward. That's the lens that I'd like to see society and the world move towards.
So in terms of the coming to terms with the decision to make your identity more publicly known, in that same interview, you discussed the role that isolating and quarantine during COVID played in terms of allowing you the time for this type of either self-discovery or affirmation of your decision. And one of the things that strikes me is runs a little contrary to what a lot of people have assumed is the experience of dealing with COVID, which is this increase of anxiety or this increase of desperation that comes or stems from the isolation. And I guess this is a question more seeking advice. How do you feel like you used the time to be constructive in terms of feeling good about yourself and who you are?
That's a really fantastic question. And you know, I specifically enjoy questions like this because this isn't a queer community question. This is an everybody question. And COVID is affecting the world, and lockdown is affecting everyone. You know, I was really fortunate that, you know, October 19th, you know, only months before the pandemic really fired off, that's when I went into rehab. So I had 40 days of really doing some deep therapy and kind of coming to terms with all my demons and learning how to, you know, get past surface level stuff and not just trying to put Band-Aids on bullet wounds, so to speak. I think that's a Taylor Swift reference, so shout out there. But it was more just I learned to come to grips with the true emotions, what was really underneath it all. So when the world really shut down and, you know, we all started getting extremely isolated, I knew that I had to do something to get busy. So a couple of things that really became key for me was daily fitness. I work out, whether it's small or big, whether it's, you know, 10 minutes of yoga, or, you know, I just did like 150 burpees with a weighted vest. Whatever it is, I try and start every day with some kind of fitness. And I found that in terms of endorphins and physical energy, that's what starts me off in such a positive mindset. So that's been really huge for me. In addition, I'm all about routine, and, you know, so many things in the world are predictable, they're not. So many things in the world are unpredictable. So what can I control? And, you know, in the Serenity Prayer, we learn a lot about, you know, accepting things we can control or accepting things we can't control. I can control that I go to bed at a regular time. So for me, I go to bed at 8:15 p.m. I get up at 5 every morning. I have a very similar start to my day every day in terms of getting my brain turned on. Sometimes that's playing online chess. Sometimes that's watching YouTube videos on powerlifting. And sometimes it's just journaling. But I do something every morning to get my brain fired up. And from there, I move into physical fitness. And I find that just sets the stage for a day of, I have the brain energy. I've got the sleep. I've got the recovery. I've got the brain energy to take on the challenges that are there. So when those challenges come and hit me face on or head on, it's, you know, I'm prepared to take that in stride. And furthermore, to my earlier comment of, you know, band-aids and bullet wounds, it's not just seeing something as, oh, I'm stressed about a bill, or, you know, I got a flat tire, but it's taking that opportunity to step back and go, okay, so what's going on for me right now? Oh, I'm frustrated. I'm pissed. This happened, that happened. It was unpredicted. Okay. Sit with that emotion, deal with it. Let's move on and get to problem solving. And I've got a great buddy in business who's always said, hey, don't tell me about the troubles at sea, just bring the ship to port. And so there's no point in my mind of getting so caught up in all of the problems, but what is the solution I'm going to find? And overall, it kind of, that mindset plus routine and just having a happy and healthy body has made lockdown, I think, a lot easier than it could have been.
One of the things about your story that I find so encouraging, and forgive me if this is prying a little too deeply, but is, so you were a husband and are a father, and you talked about how supportive your family was in terms of finding your true identity. Can you go into a little bit more detail in terms of how you guys worked through that discovery process?
Yeah. So I was married just short of 11 years, and I came out to my ex about 5 years ago. We stayed together for about 3.5-4 of that. And, you know, like, love was at the foundation of all that. And it was always, there was always a level, like a huge component of acceptance and support. And, you know, like any relationship, when there are differences and difficulties, you work through it. It wasn't a matter of just pulling the chute and, you know, abandon ship. So we worked through a lot of that, and we did our absolute best. I honestly believe that's why we have stayed so amicable, and we continue to co-parent very well. Something that I think we're both very proud of. You know, I was really concerned about coming out to family. Friends, I had, you know, come out many years ago, but it was only in the last couple of years that I came out to family. And that was a bit of a a tough bridge to cross. You know, specifically because I grew up in an Irish Catholic kind of household and community, and just a really old school sports environment. And what I realized was that, you know, a lot of that messaging was just people participating, you know, participating in the culture that we were all part of. It wasn't specifically their opinion, but it was more like, well, we were all chameleons, you know, taking on the color blue within this culture, but it didn't exactly represent who we were. So once I, you know, once I found the courage and bravery to come out and express who I was, it was like, oh my God, why didn't you tell us years ago? Like, we wish we knew. We don't care. We don't give a rat's behind about that. Like, we're happy you're you and here you are.
And the point about being a chameleon is a really intriguing one and can bridge this conversation toward your role as an official and how you anticipate this decision or this proclamation is going to be interpreted and manifest on the floor going forward. And that is, you know, you said that in the past, you had used some homophobic slurs, as many folks have, just kind of as a function of fitting in. And despite the ability to and the reality of acceptance, both from the NLL community, the lacrosse community, and as you described, the broader community, perhaps there will be a situation in the future in which somebody might make a mistake or genuinely exhibit some negative feeling or maybe even, you know, hateful comment on the floor. I'm certain that you've thought about how to handle that. Where do those thoughts lead?
Yeah, and it's I'd like to think, you know, in a sparkles and rainbows kind of world that obviously never happens.
And maybe and it won't. But if it were
right,
to,
right? And at the same time, you know, people have been part of this culture where maybe it hasn't been so much accepted, but it's been used for so long, and we've done a great job in the past of really calling people to task on that. And you know, the league is taking a really big stance behind supporting officials in putting a stop to verbal abuse. And there's been a huge shift from GMs to coaches to players all across the board. The NLL, in my opinion, is in a place of respect, probably in a better place of respect than it ever has been, at least in my experience of the past 6 years. So, you know, I just want to commend the league in and all of the participants in that shift. You know, should that occur, I guess it's an opportunity to take it with stride. You know, it's an opportunity to take a breath and, you know, we have rules that deal with whether it's racial slur, homophobic slur. You know, we have rules that deal with that if it's an on-floor occurrence. And that's, you know, that it wouldn't be the first time that it's been called. I think that it's also, you know, what if it happens in the tunnel, post-game, pre-game? What if it happens in the referee room? What if it's just a very, you know, off the cuff, probably the most common thing that people think is like, oh, that's so gay. You know, that to me, it you know, similar to parenting, if there's a 4 out of 10 incident that occurs with my kids, well, I don't come back with a 9 out of 10 reaction. I have to meet it where it's at. So I think it's also an opportunity for me to respond in a healthy way, in an appropriate way, and say, you know, I'm not okay with that, or I'm not comfortable. And at the same time, my experience thus far is, people have just caught themselves, and that's been the privilege of being out and people knowing how I identify, is that I've seen so many people be cognizant of the words they're saying. And even if it has been of habit previously, they're catching themselves. And something as simple as, you know, I was working out, you know, pre-lockdown at the gym, and a buddy of mine was like, "That's what she said." And he's like, "Oh, my bad. That's what he said." And I was like, "Hey man, you know, like, that's a great throwback joke." But like that little thing, and I called him out, and I was like, you know, that little thing means the world in terms of your awareness and how considerate and looking at an equal lens. You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into just that little catch. And I tell my students all the time, like, you get 5 seconds, you get a free 5 seconds to catch yourself. So if more people can, you know, abide by that 5 second rule, and bit by bit, we're going to change things. We're going to change how we talk, and no one's expected to be perfect. You know, do the best until you know better. And when you know better, you do better.
Why do you like being an official?
Well, because I'm better at that than being a goalie.
That's about the best answer I've ever heard.
I knew my goaltending career wasn't going too far. I got into refereeing hockey and lacrosse when I was 14. It was paying like $20 a game, and I got to skate around and run around doing something I love. My buddies were making $6.75 at McDonald's, you know, just living in Grease world. And I grew this love and passion for it. And, you know, being part of, especially at the NLL level, when you are essentially ringside for those extremely intense, heated battles that are one goal games and are back and forth, and, you know, everybody is just playing, you know, all cylinders are firing. There is nothing like being front row for that. It, you know, the job entails really policing the game and ensuring that everybody has a fair and safe opportunity to get the W. And when they're playing and when they're doing their job, it really does become that opportunity for us to, as officials, be there, create some really amazing connections in terms of player referee relationships, be there observing the game, being a participant, and just I think that, you know, that general vibe that and endorphin rush that players get, you know, getting jacked up for a game, going out, and you know, when they go back down the tunnel into the locker room and everyone's high-fiving, I don't know if players realize that we get that too as officials. Like we know when we've crapped the bed. We might not admit it publicly, but we know when we've really crapped the bed and had a rough go, or maybe made that one bad call. It happens. It's part of the job. You know, we're human. But more often than not, we're crushing it, and we're having great games. And when we get back in the dressing room, you know, it's the same high fives, chest bumps that, you know, we went out there and gave it for 2 hours, you know, the same way that we're trying to earn our paycheck in the fourth quarter when the pressure's on. It's the same thing the players are doing. And you know, staying with refereeing was my opportunity to continue feeling that energy and continue to compete. You know, all of my colleagues are, you know, my buddies. And at the same time, you know, we're all fighting for that next job. I'm not cutting anybody off at the knees, but if it's you versus me, who's going to get the big game? I want it to be me. And so that goes into my preparation and how hard I'm going to work and who's going to be on time, who's going to wake up and do the hard work, who's going to study game tape, who's going to be that deep in the rule book. It's that continual competition. I just feed off it. I love it.
You mentioned you've been a part of the league for 6 years, and that's coincided with an incredible growth phase. The league that you joined is much different from the league that currently exists, with the Wings coming back and Seals and Thunderbirds and Vancouver going under new ownership and the New York franchise and recently announced expansion to Fort Worth with the Panthers Lacrosse Club. What's been your point of view on the way in which the league has evolved during your tenure?
Yeah, in terms of the league shifting, you know, when I first came in, it was two-man. Now we're running a three-man. You know, we've tightened up the game and we have much clearer defined areas of coverage from an official standpoint. Commissioner Nick has done just a fantastic job of, you know, really making this a professional league from top to bottom. It is so well run. There's professionalism from the minute that you hit the arena, you hit the floor, you know, who's taking care of what's going on. It has been an absolute pleasure to be part of. You know, I wasn't around 10 years ago. However, you know, a couple of the vets have talked about how things used to be, and things have come a long way. And even since I came in, so we really are a very professional league, and we're growing. We're on the up and up, and if we continue to trend in this direction, there's no saying how big the league can get. And I think we're really fortunate to have such a devoted fan base of, you know, our lacrosse family that travels from east to west, north to south. It continues to grow. It continues to be there, which is allowing for expansion and allowing for these new opportunities. And the more that we have these new teams, it means we have more officials in the league. We have more referees, more coaches. And so now we have, just in general, more of North America is being part of this professional lacrosse league and standpoint. And it continues to pick up momentum and pace. It's been truly fantastic. I know Brian Lemon and Commissioner Nick have just been fantastic and really taking this in such a healthy direction.
Your article appeared on Outsports the day after the league announced that there would be no 2021 season, no April start date as was originally targeted. So now the attention turns to the future. How do you describe your excitement for the opportunity to get back on the floor, not knowing when it will be, but knowing it will probably at least have been 18 months since the last time you got to blow the whistle in an NLL game?
Yeah, it's all that off-season prep. You know, potato chips catch up with you real quick. There's, you know, for anyone who wants to be at that top tier and be their best that they want to be, it really does come down to, what are you doing in your downtime? Because everybody shows up at the pro level of anything. Everyone shows up on game day ready to go. But what separates the best from maybe the bottom of the barrel is, what are you doing in your off time? So one of the things that's really key to us as officials is our Tuesday to Thursday. How much time are we spending watching video? How much time are we in the rule book? What are we doing for our cardio? And so, you know, this 18 months off really is becoming our Tuesday to Thursday. What are we doing to stay in peak physical condition? What are we doing to stay up to date on rules? This is all downtime. That's an opportunity to continue to hone our skill set. Because if I decide to take off 6 months and my buddy who's fighting for that same spot in the same game, if he sticks with it for 6 months, ultimately he's going to have the better chance of finding success. So it'll be great to be back on the floor. It'll be back to see the league running again and, you know, just seeing the sport thriving as it has been. And in the interim, you know, it's get or done, sink or swim once we hit the floor. And being able to stay in that position and keep getting those assignments is all about what are you doing in the off time.
Well, with that in mind, Kyle, I want to thank you for joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Let you get back to your weighted vest burpees to make sure that you are in the best possible condition once the pregame clock hits zero and the lights go down for intros in your next NLL game. Really want to thank you for sharing your story so candidly with us and shedding a lot of light, not only on, I mean, my takeaway is the issues of inclusivity, particularly around sexual orientation, you know, have gone through a 20 to 30 year arc of development that hasn't been the same in every part of North America. And one of the very big corners of North America where issues of acceptance, particularly of, you know, different lifestyles, is within sports and within men's sports in particular. And I think the level of positivity with which you can share how folks have reacted to not only who you are, right, your identity, but also the method with which you chose to share it is really encouraging. And it's a foundation for what is to come. And who knows what the future holds, right? But at the same time, being able to bring the mindset of a former player, an official, right, who does the job because you're trying to adjudicate fairness, and a counselor who does the job because you're trying to help people continue to develop. And then, as you mentioned, a parent, like, I'm very encouraged by, you know, what the future holds when perhaps the picture isn't 100% rosy. It's still 99% rosy, but you got to deal with that 1% where it's like, well, you know, we've come a long way, but there's still ground to cover, as you say. So that is going to be my lasting takeaway from this conversation. And I really appreciate your ability to kind of get me thinking about that as we get started on this day.
Yeah, it's like entering the fourth quarter with a 5-goal lead. Hey, we're in a good position. That doesn't mean we take our foot off the gas. So let's keep going for the win. And hopefully when that fourth quarter buzzer rings, that we're all celebrating a big win together.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.